Awesome to welcome Davidson head coach Gale Foulkes to the basketball podcast. Coming off one of the most successful campaigns in program history, Coach Foulkes is entering her ninth season at the helm of Davidson College women's basketball program. Foulkes has guided the Wildcats to 123 wins and two postseason appearances, including the 2025 WBIT. In addition to ranking second on Davidson's all-time win list, Foulkes has coached 15 all-conference performers, while leading her club to a number of record-setting performances along the way. Along with 18 conference games for the first time in A-10 play, the 2024-25 campaign yet again featured one of the nation's toughest non-conference slates. The Wildcats rose to the challenge, posting 19 victories, their most under Foulkes, and a program-best 13 wins en route to a third-place finish, their highest since joining the league in 2014. Davidson's 13 wins in Lake 10 play weren't the only standard set last season. The Wildcats proved to be one of the most efficient and productive teams from the outside, making a school record 241, highlighted by 8 games with at least 10 made three-pointers. They also ranked among the national leaders in three-point differential, three-point defense, and assists per game against. Before arriving at Davidson, Before arriving at Davidson, Foulkes was an assistant coach at Wake Forest, UNC Greensboro, Longwood University, and was the assistant video coordinator for the WNBA's New York Liberty in 2007.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Foulkes, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Thanks, Chris. I'm really excited to get a chance to chat with you today.
Absolutely, me too. A lot of things to talk about. Maybe let's just frame it for our audience, maybe to start with. The past 2 years in particular, very successful, but it was a bit of a slow build to get to that point.
Yeah, it was. I'll be going into year nine next year. And when I got the job in 2017, Davidson women's basketball was coming off of two pretty bad seasons. And so I was in the category of getting hired to rebuild, to revamp, to try something different. And so when I got here, we really had to establish how could we be successful here. And over the last 8 years, through COVID, through the changes in the NCAA landscape with grad transfers, we don't have graduate school, so we had to learn how to navigate that. Everybody having 5 years with the COVID year, that didn't necessarily serve us that well. We had to adjust, we had to adapt, and now going into year nine, I'm really excited about where we're headed.
Yeah, no doubt. And a particular reason behind that, and something you shared with me, is this concept of trying to develop a brand or a style of play that could be a foundation for every single year. So, can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, Chris, when I got the job at Davidson, I wanted to think critically about, hey, what's a style of play that we can recruit to every single year that people would choose Davidson for? And the idea of we felt like with this guy named Steph Curry that I think everybody's heard of, we should be able to recruit shooting. We kind of joke, but Steph Curry College is the other name for Davidson College. But when I got the job at Davidson, they were actually the second worst three-point shooting team in the country, right ahead of LSU. So there's not very many similarities between Davidson and LSU. So I said, all right, we really need to revamp this. And then knowing that Bob McKillop had done such a great job building the men's side at Davidson, I said, what are some attributes, what are some qualities that has really made the men's side so successful? And there was a motion offense. There was an offense that players could get better at every single year. There was a lot of stability. There were players that were spending 4 years at Davidson, not JUCOs or 2 years or transfers, guys that they really were growing. And there was a lot of stability with their coaching staff. And so I was like, all right, that sounds really good. And Bob's teams, Coach McKillop's teams, they really shared the ball well, right? They were great passers. They played together. And so just this concept of share, shoot, and stifle, which we'll get to the stifle a little bit later, but I knew right from the get-go, I thought to be successful at Davidson, We needed to recruit smart, skilled players that had a high level of physical toughness. And that's where the stifle side comes into play. But yeah, I mean, that's what we decided to do right from the get-go. And then we were like, all right, international recruiting's really worked for the men as well. And so I hired a international coach and James Jansen, who's been with me the whole time, and we've dabbled in that and been able to get some great players. But we wanted to have a brand that anywhere in the world, and thanks to Steph, everybody around the world's heard of Davidson, we could recruit to.
That sounds smart to be able to lean into that. And obviously, a little bit of the style of play that's worked for the men's side as well. But if I get it correctly, your team set a new program record for made 3-pointers, which isn't a surprise based on what you said. But talk to me about that, because sometimes it's not that easy to be able to get this. The strategic choice is easy, but to get the practice methodologies and the concept to your players to be able to shoot more.
Yeah, when I took over the program, they weren't shooting very many threes. So one of the reasons they were not a good 3-point shooting team is that they were only shooting 10 of them a game. And when I asked the players, I said, "Why are you all not shooting threes and we're not very good at it?" They were like, "Oh, we weren't allowed to." And because we weren't good at it. And I was like, "All right from the get-go, we're going to change our thought process on that. And from here on out, if you're open, you have to shoot the ball." And if you're not good at it, get better at it. Because I'm saying the word open. I'm not saying contested, but hey, if you're open, I want you to shoot the ball, and you need to. And you're not going to play if you won't. We really empowered them. And then from year one to year two, or from before I got here being really 360 out of 361 or whatever it was, we jumped to about 180 just into year one. And so just changing the mindset was really the step one. And step two, I would say, is just reinforcing that, hey, open is really good. Open means that the defense might be in rotation. Open means, that your team's expecting you to shoot it so we can be in good offensive rebounding or good defensive transition. And for us, we really kind of leaned into that idea. And so then it became, how do you generate open shots, right? And generating open shots means you can get two on the ball. So I'd say, hey, you're a really good player if you can get two people to guard you. Now we need to be making the right choice. A lot of that is built into our system, and our saying for it is one on one, get it done. One on two, it's not for you. And one on three, you got to come sit with me. To me, it's really, I think that just that language right there has really helped our program.
I think every AAU coach and player needs that after watching AAU for the last 2 years, for
I think
sure.
so too.
It's such a simple concept, and I'm so grateful that you have great phrasing behind it. But let's dive a little bit deeper in terms of, you mentioned motion, hybrid motion. So what is hybrid motion, and what are some of maybe the key principles behind it?
Yeah, when we got here, I felt as though I didn't necessarily want to copy anyone. I wanted to just build kind of a motion that we could it'd be pretty adaptable. So I really liked some of the things that the Villanova women had been doing over the years. I liked some of the Gonzaga men's stuff. And we really said, all right, like how can we combine some of the European ball screen stuff and that framework with a lot more off-ball screening actions? And so I joke with everyone, but we really run a 4.5 out motion, and or like four, yeah, 4.5. But there's always somebody in. So whenever we're bringing two people together, we want to get somebody going down, whether that's off-ball, on-ball. But what we've done is the motion side of things is it's a very audible offense. And so the players really have the keys as far as using language based on what they see. And obviously, we've given them a little bit of a cheat sheet going into games about, hey, we think this is how they're going to guard us, or this is what we're expecting. For the most part, they're getting to make those live decisions based on what they're seeing out there on the court.
How does the auditory part fit in specifically in terms of that? Are they calling their cuts? I know Ari used
Yeah,
numbers. Are you doing
calling their
that?
cuts, calling their actions. And a lot of it's three players that are involved in the action with kind of two spacers. And everybody's able to move appropriately off ball based on which action is coming into play. And what we've found is like that randomness is really challenging for teams. It's, hey, if we're in this package where we're staying in these three actions, hey, we really want a lot of variability within these three actions. They all might look pretty similar, and a coach from a sideline, when you're doing it in real time, can't necessarily tell you what's about to happen, right? And we've just found that over time it's very simple, but it's challenging for the other team to get ahead of it, if that makes sense. They're just responding.
Absolutely. And when you teach it, when you first start teaching it, is it a whole part? Is it a whole and then parts only if we need it? What are we doing in terms of
Yeah,
teaching?
we're probably doing a little bit of both in the sense that we're probably going to show the framework of just the base right away. So that way they can see the whole piece. We watch a lot of film. And then just introducing that concept of, hey, we're just trying to seek an advantage here. Like, we're trying to bring these people together and we're doing it this way because this is probably what's going to put the most pressure on the defense. So we might be in our ball screen package, we might be in our dribble handoff package, we might be in our gets package based on the coverage of the ball screen or the coverage of things. And so that's going to be a lot more parts, right? Is, hey, we got to punish this and then we'll bring the other two spacers into play. But most of everything we do is either two or three players at all times, with the potential of having kind of that the other spacers out there to then do a good job with the dominoes. But those spacers get a lot of reps because we do a lot of just dominoes work where it's, hey, the advantage was artificially created and now we're just playing from that. So we do break those up separately.
So create the advantage, play out of the advantage, and figure it out from there. Talk to us a little bit then. You mentioned going into games with some scout, and that's one thing that's really powerful about this is that you're very adaptable. You already referenced it. But is there like an optimal number of kind of things you can attune them to before they get overloaded or underloaded? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think with how simple the concept is, hey, we're just trying to get two on the ball, or we're trying to get two to go with one. We don't have to practice everything, and we can go to it within a game, which I think is a good thing because there's only so many ways that you can guard some of this stuff, and we've probably seen it before. We can reference a previous game during a timeout, or reference a previous coverage, and I think that has been huge for us. But I think it really starts, we have really clear language, right? And that clarity is allowing us to make those decisions with the language being so clear. It's, hey, the reject or whatever we call the reject of a ball screen is there. We can use one word to describe that or whatnot. It's been fun to build and to see in games how quickly we can adapt when we need to.
And you referenced punishing a coverage, which again, ultimately is the key part of all this, is if they're doing this, we have solutions. And talk to us a little bit about how you help your players understand those solutions.
With us going back to the one-on-one, get it done, one-on-two, it's not for you. Obviously, one-on-three, come sit with me. They're really able to say, hey, if you've got two people guarding you, as quickly as possible, get the ball out of your hands. And so those solutions come from, hey, let's be really great at interacting. So if it's a guard and a forward interacting together, it's okay. How can we get two people on the ball right now? And Davidson kids are really smart. They can say, oh, I need to probably flip my screen, or I need to have a different angle to get the defense to be able to get two on the ball or whatnot. And from there, it's a lot of just teaching and asking questions in practice. I think anytime we can teach them and they can come up with the answer themselves, or ask a question to get them to come up with the answer themselves, we have a better chance at seeing that happen in live play than if we've just given them the answers.
Awesome insights. And take us through shot selection responsibility for your team then.
I thought early on we didn't do a great job of this, and we were trying to make things a little bit more complicated with, oh, this shot or that shot. And we really changed it to really simple language, but a we shot versus a me shot. And a we shot would be anything open or anything one-on-one at the rim against somebody you can score against. And a me shot would be the opposite of that, contested or the one-on-twos or one-on-threes. And it's like, all right, let's relentlessly hunt those shots. And we're referencing that in practice. We're referencing that when we're watching our game film from before. We've been able to show that, hey, if we are getting these types of shots, whether they go in or not, we have a really good chance at also being on offensive glass, right? Because those types of shots typically bring in help and people are in rotation. And the more shots you can take with the defense in rotation, the better off everything's going to be. And so for us, that clarity of shot selection was something that we really decided a couple years ago. Hey, we really need to clean this up. And it's worked out really well for us.
Absolutely. And it shows on your offensive success and the bottom line, which is winning. And you mentioned share, shoot, and stifle. So let's get into the stifle part now about defensively. What are you trying to do?
We're trying to just take away all the things we were seeking on offense, as simple as that. And we found that transition offense, we want transition offense. How can we stop the other team from being in transition? And this really came from a couple years very early on in my Davidson career, where we were a pretty traditional defensive system, transition D system, where one back or two back, or hey, I want you to be the ball stopper, I want you to be the rim. And then we would get into film and it would just be like there was all these exceptions. She shot it from the corner, so she couldn't get back, or she fell down, or this happened, that happened. And Davidson kids were just asking me a million questions about every single play, and I just felt like we're never going to practice because there's all these questions. And after a couple years of navigating all of that, I said, all right, we need to look into something else because I don't think we're coaching this that way. I don't think we're very good at it. I don't think it's resonating. And so we studied a few different things and we decided to go to tagging up, which was a defensive, it's the end of offense, start of defense transition system. And really the clarity of everybody doing the same thing every single time was something that really resonated with our team. It was something we could really hold accountable, that we could grade out. And from there, the stifle kind of got better, right? So we took away a lot of transition. And then over time, we adopted a lot more switching on defense. So early on, we were very sticky, as we like to say, and then we went to being very switchy. And so that combination of having the flexibility to slow people down and then get them in the half court, and a lot of the advantages that they've been trying to get on offense just aren't working because two are never with the ball. And so our mission in the half court is we want one person guarding one person for as long as possible, and we want to make them have to do one more thing. And so it's just how long can that happen? And at this point, we're very good at holding teams into the last couple seconds of the shot clock and then not being in very much rotation. So our rebounding numbers are pretty good.
Are you still tagging up?
Oh, yeah. That is that
So you can
we're
take
in.
us a little deeper because I think that's so many people have explored it, but I know over time you've stuck with it. And talk to us a little bit about that process, maybe for some of the challenges of it that you've been able to overcome, because I think that's really the thing for a lot of coaches, just overcome a few of those challenges.
I do think it's something you have to recruit to. So I don't think that it's the best system if you have a really big range of players. So really small point guards, really big centers. When I'm talking really big, like 6'5", 6'6", and the 5'6" and under, 5'5" and under point guards. I do think in tagging up, it is challenging because there's a lot of times where in your matchups, you could be really mismatched. And so for us, one of the things that we've gone to is just really recruiting that 5'7" to 6'2", 6'3" range of player that's way more interchangeable defensively. And we haven't always switched with it. You don't have to switch a lot on the backside, but you do need to have enough defensive flexibility that if somebody's playing fast, you have enough people that can hold their own with a wide range of personnel. And so I would say that's really the only challenge that I could see from a looking at your team and, hey, should I do this or should I not do this, being something that you consider. But after that, to me, it just comes down to it's a very simple system that provides a lot of clarity where on every single shot, you're stepping forward, you're making contact, you're getting to the high side. And from there, you really have provided a lot of early resistance to get back in transition. No one's free. No one's just taken off. And by doing that, a lot of teams don't have the freedom to just play recklessly, right? They want to get into their sets. They want to get into their motions. They want to do those things. So if you can take away that initial gravity, you're most likely now going to be in half court defense. And we've found that in women's basketball, it's a lot harder to score in the half court than it is in transition. So I do think that's been a huge piece as to why we've had so much success in the last couple of years, whether it's been able to beat some of these top teams or whether it's been to play them very closely, is because we've really neutralized their transition has been a huge part of it.
Do you feel at this point for you guys it's something unique? Like they don't play against it all year, then all of a sudden they've got to account for this kind of thing? Yeah.
I think some teams really struggle with the player being up on the ball, somebody being on bodies, point guards that have been getting long outlets all year. We're now a little nervous about that. Players that have been throwing outlet passes all year up the floor now are not able to do that. And so we've had some teams that just really struggle with the idea that they just can't play in transition. And like the things they do in practice all the time, because that's what they want to be, they've been more turnover prone. But I would say that, anybody that has got a lot of flexibility from a personnel side of things like size on their roster with a pretty high motored group, it's a great system at a lot of different levels because it's very easy to teach and to rep. And so the repping really takes care of itself after they understand the why behind it.
I've always thought it's such a great system for young players to figure out because we always are constantly telling them to find a check. And it's pretty direct and as early as possible to find a check as a part of it.
And the defense's job is to come find you. I think that's the other piece of it is that it is quite simple because they're yelled at if they don't come find you. That part's made it a little bit easier in a lot of games.
So, a little bit more about it. I love the idea that you pair it with switching man to man. I know you talked about it a little bit, but what are some of the things that you've tried maybe that you said, this doesn't exactly work the same as this to come to this conclusion?
We obviously did just a basic transition offense. And then in the half court, we've really found that when you get two people on the ball defensively, when you're kind of trying to figure that out. So we've been a no middle team, we've been a no baseline team, like we've fluctuated between those two things. The reality is that what we found, as opposed to being no middle or no baseline, is hey, we really don't want the ball to be going middle, but it's not the end of the world if it does. We don't want to give up straight lines because straight lines involve two people. That they're going to give up. Somebody else has to come and account for the ball if it's getting there free. For us, that's been what we've really tried to minimize. And so we've gone to a lot of peel switching. And just if two people are crossing paths, let's switch. Let's keep one on one and not be in rotation. And a lot of teams spend a lot of time practicing their midline help or practicing this rotation, help the helper, and all of those things. And we've really gone away from it because we want to be trying to guard the ball and keep it in front of us. And then from there, the goal is to make them do one more thing. So if you're the player that can get there to make them have to do one more thing, do it, as opposed to it just being the set rotation. And I think that's been a bit of our superpower as of late, defensively, is that teams really can't scheme for where the help is going to come from.
I love peel switching. Can you take us a little bit deeper in terms of some of the key teaching points behind peel switching?
With peel switching, a lot of it has to do with, hey, if you're closest, you need to be ready to go. If you're going to cross paths, you need to be ready to go. And that decision needs to be not too late that now you have both there and now you're giving up offensive rebounds, but not too early that the defense isn't really beat. Like it has to be a threatening thing for us to be peel switching. And so threatening is approaching the lane. You know, if you're approaching the lane, we want to try to provide that force field where nobody's getting through that without a chest being in front of them or a counter having to be made. So for us, it's you're crossing paths, it's threatening. It could be a shot at the rim, it could be somebody that we know we need to be stopping early because if they get too deep, it's over with. But so some of it's going to be scout specific, but at its core, we just have to make them do one more thing. And that simplicity has really just, we can stop practice and say, hey, could we have stopped them? Could we have made them do one more thing? And they're like, yeah, if I would have come over, it's okay. That's what appeal is. Let's do that right now. So I think simple has been good. We don't spend a ton of time repping it. I think we point it out more when it needs to have happened, if it didn't already happen.
And it really does point to figure it out situations in a sense that it's, as you said, when you ask the question, it seems natural and normal for them that this is a solution, I imagine.
Exactly. And for some kids in some years, sometimes we'll be repping it more. We'll rep it out of different things. Hey, we were trying to bust up a handoff and we were late. So they got the handoff and now that is becoming a late switch or a peel switch. So we'll rep it different ways. But for the most part, it is a little bit of the feel piece that you just have to gotta have with that overall mission.
Hey, coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you know which players should be taking what kind of shots? An analytics system like Hoopsalytics can help your team make better shot selection decisions. You can track every kind of shot each player takes, where the shots come from, rate the shot quality, track if the shot was contested, and see the results. For example, see which players are taking mid-range floaters and measure the results versus catch-and-shoot jumpers. As an added bonus, Hoopsalytics shot charts are fully interactive, so you can filter by shot distance, shot type, or even specific areas of the floor. Then watch video clips of all those shots or see the points per shot. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball. Today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free.
You've referenced using questions in practice to engage the learners, and I love that aspect of it. Can you take us through maybe some of the things over time that have improved you as a question asker in particular?
That's a good question. How about that?
That's what I'm here for, Gail.
I know. I would say I just try to be curious and try not to assume that joke with them all, but I recruited you, I believe in you. I assume you're trying to help us win here. And so if it's not going well, let's work together. That's the job here. It's all of us against the other team or the other program. And so I think just that starting point that, hey, they are trying to do what we've asked. And if they're not, I need to ask, or I need to bring them to the side and ask, hey, what did you see? Why did you choose to do that? Or, hey, what else could you have done? And then try to get them to pull from some of these things. Because I think when they've had to pull from their memory or from an experience, it's more likely to stick to the next one. But I would just say being curious and not assuming that they just weren't trying. I think that's the worst thing we can do as coaches, is assume that they're not trying to do their best, because I think everybody wants to do well.
It's such a great answer because I feel like often it's the default for coaches that they're actively trying to screw it up. They are not.
Yeah, no. Everybody wants to look good,
That's
so
absolutely. And
that's
they
got
want
to
to do the
help.
right thing for themselves and the team. So that
Yeah.
just makes sense and connects. And how about for the receiver? Is there any type of framing that you provide for the receiver when you ask questions in the sense that I think sometimes as coaches, when we do ask questions, we sometimes don't wait for the answer, for example.
Yeah, I think that's something that every coach is trying to get a little bit better at, because you're so quickly to want to jump right back in. But I think when you ask a question, it's always in your best interest to hear the whole answer. And so try to just be disciplined in hearing them, because I think the more you hear, the better the response can be to help them. If you cut them off, it's challenging to understand, because I think the point of asking a question is not to be right or wrong, but to have better understanding. And so we're just trying to understand best. And that's how I've gone about building our staff, is that I want people that can be those types of coaches and those teachers, because we've got some of the best learners in the country at Davidson. These kids are brilliant. And there's one thing they can do, they can learn at a really high level. So we just need to be really good at teaching.
I love that. And I know another thing that's really important to you is developing clarity of things. Can you take us through what that means?
Yeah. I think the answer everybody, or the question everybody wants to have, is, Coach, I want to play. What can I be doing to get on the court? Or how can I have more playing time? Or how can I help the team win more? And one of the things that we've done is just develop this like sheet. It's front and back that has just a lot of non-negotiables, I would say, or like lists. And so we have a list of things called the can't play ifs. And those things are more related to, you've got to be ready to mentally transition. You've got to use our language. And those can't play ifs are because it's not fair to the other four people on the court to have to play with you if you're not aligned with what we're all doing. And so to me, those have really provided great clarity, because it's not, oh, you have to have this great step back, or you have to have these basketball related things. It's no, you've got to really fit in with the other four people really well, so that way we can play together really well. And to me, that's provided a lot of clarity, giving them sort of these attributes or things related to personality or things that would enhance our style of play, talk, touch, being able to be challenged and being able to be supported, being able to challenge and be supported, or and support. It really helps when players can be on both ends of the receiving and the delivering of challenge and support. But communication is a big thing in our program. So I would say just those intangibles, along with kind of the non-negotiables, and we give them a list of, hey, these are the skills you're going to need in every game, not in the last 5 seconds of a tight game, but all the time. You got to be able to do these things. And if you can do these things, you're most likely going to play a lot, because it happens a lot. And for us, we're just really big on the things that happen the most, you need to be the best at, because they happen a lot.
Where
So.
did you evolve this? Is that with in collaboration with players, or was this just over time this came out?
I think what really, we were in a transition period where we were coming off just an okay year. And I was like, how could I make this better? How could I make this more clear? And it was between that year where we weren't very good, and then all of a sudden we got a lot better. And it was just, these things are important all the time. It's not going to change. They're important to me. I think they're important to winning. And it's would be great if the players just had this in their notebook, that they could see it all the time. And if I'm having a meeting with a player and say, hey, these are the things you need to get better at, I can point to those very specific things that we've outlined for everybody consistently. And to me, that consistency allowed kids to stay focused. It wasn't something that when they go home, they're working on all these other things. It's no, these things are really important to Davidson and to winning. And to be a great player here, I need to get better at these things. So I think that clarity's been good. And another unique thing about Davidson is we don't have a summer school model. And so we don't have the ability to have our kids on campus for 8 weeks and start to introduce a lot of this stuff. I've got to be providing them that roadmap all the time because they're going to spend 4 months most likely at home where they're going to need to know how to get better for us. So I think that was a big part of it as well, is how can I be better for them for that?
Great phrasing, how they need to get better for us. That's powerful phrasing. So maybe take us through that. So there, because to a certain extent, all colleges have times where their players are not on campus, so this can help direct us. And certainly, high school coaches have this all the time. So talk to us about how can you help direct a player to be able to work on things that actually help them.
I think in the summertime, it is a great time to explore other things. Like, I think it is your time to maybe add stuff to your game. So I want there to be some creativity so we don't provide them with these strict programs to follow. Because quite frankly, they're going to have different trainers, they're going to have other coaches, they're going to be playing some pickup, they're going to be in a lot of different environments that are going to be way less structured than our environment, but they've just spent 8 months in our environment. And so what we're doing to try to make them better for us is just very clearly, we have a style of play that we recruited to. So now that you've been in our system or been in our program, there were some things you were good at, and there were some things that maybe were in the way of you playing a lot. And so those have been communicated. And then from there, it's keep it really simple. If you've got to shoot when you're open, one-on-one, get it done. You've got to be able to, if two people are guarding you, be able to make all those types of passes and decelerate and make those choices. But it's not, I would say, this big grand plan as much as it is. The themes are always being talked about. You're hearing them all the time. And so I think you just go home with this, hey, this is what it's like to play at Davidson. I got to be doing these things as much as we can. Our individuals that we do typically are the same for all players the first 15 minutes. 10 to 15 minutes are the same, and they're the things that happen the most in a game for us on offense. And we want those things you to be great at all the time. And then everything else is going to be a little bit different based on position or based on what you're good at. But I would say our players go home with a really clear understanding of these are the things because they've been repped in a lot of different ways. And you were either pretty good at it and you got to do them a lot in games, or hey, we need improvement. I would say clarity and style of play, I think, then allows the player development to follow. I think if you're changing your style of play a lot, it's really easy for kids to be distracted when they're away from you.
You knew I was going to ask this, but what are some of those things in your program that every player does in those first 10 minutes?
Yeah, I would say 1 foot and 2 foot finishing. I think that if you're ahead, being able to go off a 1, 2 foot finishing, a lot of catch to shoot footwork, just making sure that our feet are really good, our hands are really good.
Do you
Attacking the
care about
ball.
their footwork? Are you changing their footwork?
We've found that it's best if I call them gun threes. So those are just shots that you would get off the gun. So paint touch threes, we call them gunshots. But essentially, if you're getting a gunshot, your feet should be pretty similar because the ball's coming inside out. And trying to just have your feet be the same every time in those types of situations. And then everything else, we're not that picky with. We do try to practice that kind of gunshot, though, quite a bit because we want that to just be something we shoot at a high clip. We get a lot of them. And we've found when people's feet are really different, their consistency is all over the map with it. So I would say that we are a little picky with that. But after that, probably not.
You keep going with the list if you can
Oh,
remember which.
yeah, we'll do, quite a bit of that. And then probably a lot of different passing. So a lot of deceleration, being ready to pass. And then for us, we've been adding in like kind of the, you've gotten yourself in, you've driven in, we've found out. And now, hey, we want you to be able to finish then a post up type stuff. So like that ball will come back into you and work on some basic post stuff because we've got great size at a lot of different spots. And so just the different footwork surrounding the deceleration and then also just what happens if you get yourself in and now you're in a one-on-one get it done type of situation.
So, what are things we're doing to develop one-on-one get it done within your program?
Yeah, I would say every kid has probably a natural preference. Some kids like to go off of 1 foot, some people like to go off of two. We have one player right now in our program that everything she wants to be a counter. And so I think everybody that plays against her calls her pivots or something like that. And it's like, all right, you are very good at that. And so now we need to be working more on the 1 foot finishing or more of the power style finishing type of stuff. And so I would say we've got a little bit of a base where we're working on the 1 foot. We have a series called like the Guard Mikens, which just starts right inside the free throw line, where it's just 1 or 2 dribble pounds into a variety of different finishes off of one, off of outside foot, inside foot, off of two with shot fakes, step throughs. just as many different ways that we can do that. And then also, one thing that we've found is that we've really gone to doing a lot of dribble, we call them Barclays, but the dribble post-ups against teams that are really good at doubling in the post and things like that. The dribble post-ups are really hard to do. And that's something that I would say gets worked into all that finishing is, hey, how can at the end of penetration us turn that into a post-up? Because we got great size. I think we've got a lot of 6 foot guards and they get down there, they need to be able to score from an extended post touch, essentially.
Love that. The Barkley in and of itself, not that complicated. Turn a drive into a post up. However, off the ball spacing relative to the Barkley, can you talk to us about some of the things that you do off the ball to be able to create more space for the Barkley?
Yeah, we've got several just cuttings, like different cuts that we have named that we will go to, whether we're emptying something out, whether we're exchanging on the backside, whether we're diving from the backside. I would say that's scout specific. Hey, what are they most likely going to do? And what we've found is that it is hard for them to truly double. Just because it happens fast, it happens in different places. And the second that we see somebody coming, we're getting the ball out of our hands. Right. And once we've gotten the ball out of our hands, we're now in that kind of domino side of things as quickly as possible. But I would say that off ball, it's just at a very bare minimum, don't be three in a row. And if you're not three in a row, you're probably in a spot that you're helping the other player, you're helping your teammate that has the ball. So I would say that's a base with some more scout specific cutting that we would put into specific plans.
Awesome. And then how much of the you reference finishing and the different types of finishing drills or situations, especially at a one-on-one, get it done? Are they largely playing one-on-one against each other in some context, or is there distraction at the rim? What are we doing in terms of the finishing specifically?
We'll have a lot of scout players that kind of serve as, I would say, 70% defense, if that makes sense. We'll use coaches, we'll use that type of distraction. We're not doing a ton of live 1v1 body to body stuff in season. I think that is something that we'll do a little bit more out of season. But to me, we're just really trying to get as much volume and as much like confidence and seeing the ball go through the rim in those phases. With a lot of like the volume being the most important thing. You can probably get 4 or 5 contact finishes up in a drill if you're playing 1-on-1 for 5 minutes. You can get 40 to 50 up without full contact. And so I think that volume really matters over time, particularly with younger players, is them getting just the reps if there's a lot of different ways that you may have to finish. And then guiding them through those finishes with that kind of bothered defense at the end is probably the rep or probably the thing we go to most.
I love that. That's a great example of comparing the reps between the two, guided versus live, and just tremendous example there. You must be itching by the time they finally do get to campus.
Oh,
Take us through that. Because as coaches, we get overly excited sometimes. So how do you temper that for you to be able to make sure that you make the most impact progressively rather than, again, I'm so excited, we're going to do it all right away?
yeah, I think every year is a little bit different, but we're probably going to start with some small group workouts where we're just diagnosing where everybody's at. We have a lot of players playing international basketball. We have a lot of players that when they go home, you know, whether they're coming back from injury or whether they're coming back from a rehab situation. So everybody's going to be going through small group stuff to get a really good idea of where everyone is at. And then from there, we're probably going to put together really small groups that are designed, not small, really small, but probably 2 different groups. So a group of 6 and a group of 7, and do introductory actions, introductory to our tra introduce transition offense with half the team, and then have another half team workout. But when we're limited by those 4 hours, we really want to try to get as many reps at the things that happen the most up as possible in a session. And having a full team, you're waiting in line for 2/3 of the time and getting to do it 1/3 of the time. And we found by having a mix of older players and younger players in those groups, the younger players can learn from the older players and we can build really systematically. And sometimes I'm like, hey, older players, we're not there yet. So stop asking about that yet. We're going to get there, but we need to stay just right here, right now. And they're like, okay. They've been here. But really, we're going to start with just 2 player interactions and then add in kind of the dominoes side of things. So the back end. So we'll start with when the advantage has already been created. And now we're just playing from that. We're going to start with that really early because we feel like that's going to happen the most. And we got to be great at that. And then we're going to pretty systematically go through our interactions of bringing 2 or 3 people together in a progressive way. Okay, we'll start here, go there, while also layering in some pretty basic defensive concepts. But I would say offense, we start with much earlier. Like I would say offense and tagging up. So offense and ending offense is where we'll probably start. And then from there, we feel like we've got to be pretty good at those 2 things. And then the rest can follow after that.
Coach, one of the favorite things I saw was online you talking about the metaphor of rock, paper, scissors to teach offensive decision making. I love this. Can you take us deeper?
I'll credit James Jansen on our staff for coming up with it, but or I don't know if he came up with it or if he brought it to us, but just the idea that as an offensive player, you're basically in a fake game of rock, paper, scissors where the defense has to throw down their rock, paper, or scissors a split second before you do. So it's a delayed rock, paper, scissors game where, in theory, if you can always see what the defense is doing, you can make them wrong and win. And we joke, a shot drive choice is just a game of rock, paper, scissors, right? You should be able to perceive the ball coming to you. Is the defense closing you out or are they closing out short? That's a shot drive choice. Like that, by seeing that a split second ahead of time, you should be able to make them wrong. And so, whether that's in a ball screen, they've gone over, they're in a drop, whatever it is, as an offensive player, if you're doing it well and you can see it, you have a chance to make them wrong. And so that just game of rock, paper, scissors is what we're always playing. And so whether it's off ball screening action, hey, they're doing this, we should do that, dribble handoffs, ball screen, we just have to really teach the idea that you have to see. You can't just recklessly do. Because if you can see, you can make them wrong. If you can make them wrong, you'll get two people on the ball or you'll be open. One of those two things will happen. And then from there, we can hopefully get a great shot.
And it just strikes me as like the idea of using constraints or different things like that. It's like the good players find a way to cheat the constraint. Just like I
Oh,
imagine the
yeah.
best rock, paper, scissors players find a way to cheat it a little bit by just a little delay, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And you're trying to connect that for players to be late with their decision making rather than so early by predetermining.
Absolutely. We joke, but the predetermined player usually is in the way because they're driving something that's not there, or they shot a ball that gets blocked out of bounds. They're really problematic for us. And so whenever we can, we're trying to catch them if they start getting predetermined. No, we can't do that. So by designing drills that are random enough that they can't, that we're not ever allowing them to do this, be on train tracks is another way that we'll say it's no, you actually have to just constantly be responding, respond. And sure, you can anticipate a bit. Anticipation is important, but it can't be on train tracks. Like you can't be assuming that's what's going to happen. And so going into game prep, which we've actually gotten away from saying, this is how they're definitely going to guard you. Like we're going to say, hey, this is what they're most likely going to do, but within a drill, we'll guard it differently. Just throw it out there different and see if they can make us wrong. Because I'll joke and say, they adjusted out of a timeout and they won that possession because we weren't ready for it. So just trying to push that into practice as well.
High level stuff. Love it. And you mentioned game planning. So I was going to go there a little bit because I love watching A10 basketball on the women's side, particularly because such a diversity of type of styles and different preparations for you. So take us through how you handle that.
It's a great league. Everybody plays a little bit differently. There's some great coaches that have been doing this a really long time, and they've established other great styles of play. And I would say that something that we've tried to really just embrace is that we do have a style as well, right? Like they are having to prepare for us. And whether it's through the tagging up or the switching or how we go about offense, they are having to do that. And we're going to spend quite a bit of time of just making sure we feel really confident about our stuff, because I think that our confidence will lead to us being better decision makers once, no matter what they do, is us going into a game confident. So we'll spend a lot of time on that. But as far as in our league, we're going to be pretty flexible defensively, depending upon kind of what someone's doing within our base. Like we've got ways to be flexible enough, but we've really switched to prioritizing more defensive decision making versus defensive rules. Hey, what's threatening right now? You know what? How can we just make them do one more thing? This situation is threatening. We have to provide more resistance here with other players or a different rotation or a trap or whatever that looks like. But every game, we're really just going through what's going to be most threatening, what's going to happen a lot, and how can we be really prepared to just make them have to go to a different bag or go to one more thing, one more thing, one more thing over and over again?
Coach, your success the past few years in particular just demonstrates such a high level of coaching and program building. And as we alluded to at the beginning, that takes time. So, can you take us a little deeper on the belief and the part that kind of led to this type of breakthrough and success?
Yeah, I think I've been really fortunate that when I got to Davidson, I was hired to take over a program that was not doing very well. And The athletic director at the time took a chance on me being 32 and not having head coaching experience necessarily. And they said, all right, let's try to make it better. And I was like, okay. And so we really did go about building it differently in the sense that I knew that we were only going to be doing it with 4-year players and we were going to have to build it from the ground up. And that patience that they had in allowing us to continue to recruit players year after year, we were able to retain them. We've been one of the most stable programs in the country since I got here, has allowed for that kind of consistency and getting better year after year. But it really was having that confidence behind, hey, we're going about doing things the right way. Our players are graduating. They're, I think, having a good experience because we were really, I would say, honest in that recruiting process about, hey, this is a different place. We're a niche school. It's going to take a special type of player and person that's going to really want to be great at Davidson, but I do need you to be 2 feet in if you choose this place. And so that they had that belief in me. I turned around, had that belief in them, and there just hasn't been any shortcuts. It's been that steady progress year after year of making players better, having more investment from our administration and our institution, our college, and that's allowed us to keep getting better and better players. It's because there's been consistency. And I think with any organization, you need to have consistency in staff, and we've been able to do that. You need to be able to retain your talent and your players. And if you can keep doing that and everybody's invested, you're going to see a great return. And I think that's been something that's been really evident at Davidson, is that they've stuck with us through some ups and downs, understanding that there was a big plan and process in place to try and just see through all the way.
Now our listeners know too that you've done a great job, and it's been wonderful to hear those in-depth insights in terms of your program and the phrasing and style of play and everything else you shared with us. Gail, we can't thank you enough for sharing the game with us.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's been a blast.